Hi, and welcome to Prosody, WESA's weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest today is the poet Jennifer Jackson Barry. Jennifer Jackson Barry is a member of the Mad Women in the Attic, the Pittsburgh Poetry Exchange, and the Squirrel Hill Poetry Workshop. Poems have appeared in Harper Palette, Stone Highway Review, 5 AM, Connotation Press, and other journals. She's the author of the chapbooks, When I Was a Girl, which is forthcoming from Sundress Publications, and Nothing But Candy, published by Liquid Paper Press in 2003. She holds degrees from the University of Pittsburgh and Indiana University's MFA program. Hi, Jennifer. How are you?
Hi, Jan. It's good. It's good to be here.
Yeah. And you're going to start with some poems from your forthcoming chapbook, When I Was a Girl.
Right. It's a series all under the same title. They're tritinas, which are truncated sestinas with three repeating end words. And I'm going to start with that. When I was a girl. Sleepovers were socks stuffed in bras we wouldn't have needed otherwise, and nothing on bottoms but undies, performing burlesque to a rotating group of judges who would soon take their turns with feather boas, who would use the same socks, the attached garage not a gossipy backstage, but a collaboration, not under the guise of anything but friendship, showstoppers, underrated dance moves from chubby girls who knew how to move, who were still years from hiding our bodies, then not caring who saw flesh, not understanding it would ever change. When I was a girl, swimming was making Diane mad at her birthday party when I only went down the water slide once. I didn't know how to keep from going under. At Heather's pool, I couldn't plant my feet in the 4-foot-deep pool and flailed, thinking I was drowning. I looked like I was playing the part of a much older girl in my Mrs. swimsuit, high legs. No others fit. Swimming was trying not to make a splash. Fat girls are not encouraged to cannonball like the fat boys are. At private pool lessons, I could only sit on the concrete edge and fall, not dive in, part water with hands in a perfect triangle, not overhead, but pointing at the pool floor, parting my knees. When I was a girl, treasure was bop, teen beat, tiger beat, posters of the two Corys before drugs and death, Kirk Cameron, Ralph Macchio, school books wrapped in brown grocery bags with penciled graffiti and bubble letters, too good to be forgotten, from best friends, bubblegum shared piece by piece, split heart necklaces worn on two necks, ID bracelets with a boy's name for the lucky ones, school field trips to the aviary and plays and museums, back to school shopping for erasers, stickers, scented markers, bubble-wrapped trapper keepers, and Papa Point pencils. No more trips to the back of the schoolroom to sharpen, to imagine the word bubbles above the heads of the bullies, fatso. When I was a girl, fashion was anything slimming, vertical stripes, black, but nothing exactly like a skinny girl's because of the inevitable comparisons. Puffy paint, jackets laced with novelty pins, pegged jeans, jeans pegged tight with a safety pin, so no bending over to fix the cuffs and showing my butt. Then sports team shirts, British Knights, Bugle Boy, an inevitable androgyny of same. Baggy and boyish inevitably hid what everyone else showed, the anti-pin up, and just in case, sweaters long enough to cover my butt. Fashion makes the woman, but inevitably girls like me are pinned, stuck between butch and a soft place. When I was a girl, fear was bleeding through the pad, being picked last, taking off my shoes, weigh in with a clueless nurse, repeat of the dodgeball to the gut or running the mile, president's physical fitness tests, boobs so big running gave black eyes and backaches, removing summer's last sun-in streaks mid-October with hair dye too dark. Repeat of English teacher asking if anything's wrong. Repeat of the visit to the therapist's office, running through the list of reasons why black hair isn't a last cry for help. Last line repeated to anyone who listened, I'm always running.
If you just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest today is the poet Jennifer Jackson Barry. She's reading from her forthcoming chapbook, When I Was a Girl. When you began your reading, you were talking about the form of these poems, Tritinas. Can you tell us again what that is? Because I don't know them.
We know a sestina is a repeated end line, end words over six lines, and it repeats in a different pattern over the course of six stanzas. And then there's a three-line closing stanza that uses all the words. A tritina essentially cuts it in half. So there's three repeating end words in three tercets, and then a closing line that includes all those three words again. I didn't always follow the model perfectly, mm-hmm. but I used it pretty closely.
Okay, so you didn't make it up.
It's out there.
It's out there.
Yeah.
It's real.
Yep. Okay.
Interesting. Can you talk about why you chose that form for
the chapbook poems? When I Was a Girl, it's going back to girlhood, and it's a topic that I obsess over. There's something unfinished about my adolescent years for some reason. So
really?
You'll see. I have more poems to read. You'll see. But I think that the obsessive use of the same words mimicked what was going on in my head about that time period and about growing up and the insecurities and the feelings that young girls have.
Oh, okay. Okay. I liked the poems, but I loved the poem that focused on popular culture. I mean, all of them did, but especially the Tiger Beat. It was so great to hear Tiger Beat.
Right.
Again, and the two Corys,
mm-hmm.
yeah,
one of them's still with us, I believe.
Yeah,
yeah,
and erasers and stickers right. and yeah, everything. Can you do you have other poems that focus on popular culture? Is it one of your main concerns?
I think so. I like to find the mix of high and low, and I think maybe sometimes the fact that I'm writing a poem is the highest part of the culture I'm referencing, wherein I'm staying in the low, I'm looking at Tiger Beat, I'm looking at reality TV, you know, whatever is in my day-to-day life.
Are you saying Tiger Beat is low culture? I love Tiger Beat.
You know, you and I might think it's high culture.
Yeah, okay. All right. Can you read some more poems? Now, these are these are from the chapbook.
No, actually, I'm going to go beyond the chapbook.
Okay.
And these are just some recent poems I've been working on. The first one I'm going to read is about a haircut I had recently. So.
Okay.
All right. This is called This Trouble of Curls. A woman my age with this trouble of curls should have a regular stylist. I go to Supercuts. I've been broken up with by more hairdressers than boyfriends. Janine got fired 2 years ago and didn't take my number from the Rolodex. Before her, Kate moved to Arizona and didn't tell me. I left Tammy, but she was begging for it. How could she dye blonde a chunk of hair left an inch longer than my bob, a side tail just above my left collarbone, and think it looked good? My husband remembers that flax curl from eighth grade, teases me. He's still upset only one person noticed when he cut his tail the next year. He was nervous the weekend before going back to school, a different man, his mid-back lock just a scut at his nape. My neck is cold. A little off the length didn't translate this time. It's October, so my elbows are covered. We live in a time of three-quarter sleeves. I grew up when it was only short sleeve or long sleeve, and the girls at Fantastic Sam's had pet names in lights above their stations. Sweet Pea, Angel, Toots. Cookie took the thinning shears to my hair once. She said, "Don't tell your dad I made you look 21. I looked like her, tough, teased. It was the most amazing mullet back when mullets were allowed. I'll keep going to the chains with the just graduated girls. I'll hope for someone who studied. Last week, when my latest girl asked her coworker for a Mason Pearson brush, then muttered, "Didn't you pay attention in school?" I knew I'd give up my head to her. So I have the pop culture references, and I went back to eighth grade in that one as well. I'm going to read a longer poem. It's in three parts. It's called Fair Triptych. One, leg skin stretched to shine, the boy waddled to the scale, his father's hand on his four-year-old back. Compassion lived in the carny. 79, and then, aw, you win, go pick a prize. She never even whispered afterward what 79 lowballed. I recognized the father as my boyfriend at 19, the man 6 years my senior who grabbed my breasts, paws swinging from a 400-pound frame. These are too big. He did that kind of damage you can't really describe. If I were a different person, I might brag about being tied to the bed for my first time. My husband, standing beside me in the crowd around the game, read every story, even ones I never told, in my face watching that ugly face, proud his son fooled his first woman into feeling sorry for him. Two. I won four knives at the ring toss tent. I posed for pictures, blades open, fanned across my cheek. The most dangerous thing I'd ever done was break up with him. Fool me once, I wouldn't know the house by the Porsche he said was in the driveway. There was never a Porsche in the driveway. He didn't drive, no license. It wasn't his house, it was his parents' basement, musty, full of boxes, frequently flooded, his bed tucked in a corner. Fool me twice, I can do better, I can do better. I'm the best you can do. I agreed to a friendly gift exchange for Christmas a month later. Yellow gold charms and chains, a bracelet, yellow gold, brash and cowardly. Jewelry I gave back because, no, I won't be that again. Signs at the tent screamed, "You ring it, you win it." Knives glinted in the sun, tiny pins of light on photographs, matched in brightness only by the same pins shooting off silver hoops hanging from my ears. Silver, what I've worn since I can remember. Three. It's hard to find feather roach clips. There are no more square mirrors of AC/DC, Black Sabbath, Rat. Spidora has legs made of Christmas lights. I've stood in front of mirrors to see my lingerie. I've fallen asleep waiting. What did I look like to the girl he roped into befriending me? Pre-webcams, she didn't see my reaction to threesome or the follow-up. Do you know the difference between love and in love? What did my face look like when I was having one of those orgasms he claimed I had but didn't know I had? I know what his face looked like when he grew tired. I put my hand on top of his hand. He pulled back. Yeah, yeah, do yourself. Even the best illusionists can't make us believe it's a woman's head on a spider body. We only wonder how her body is being hidden. Funhouse mirrors and fornication force us to see everything from every angle. I saw both our disappointments over the bed. He untied my legs. I'd also been writing a lot of poems recently about infertility and a miscarriage I experienced. Some of these poems are difficult, and I've been given the praise that they're brave. And while I appreciate that, they feel more necessary than brave to me. So I'll start with one called Body of Betrayals. Oh, missed orgasms and inopportune menses. Oh, lack of athleticism. Oh, sweat that trickles from armpit to waistband and strange wet spots on my sides. I don't care so much about going a little while laughing or sneezing or coughing. The fact that I should Kegel is on me. I'm over the curly hair. I even forgive the years to perfect the ratio of gel to spray gel. I'm almost okay with the machine gun string of farts during the president's physical fitness sit-up test in fourth grade. The boob pimples when you know low-cut shirts are the fat girl's only ace in the hole, just cruel. Oh, lack of lubrication when I'm drunk. Oh, mole hair on my chin. Oh, hereditarily weak ankles. Oh, fall in the bowling alley. Oh, fall in the snow. Oh, fall with jeans ripped from crotch to toe. I'll spend the next however many years situating myself in my bra so my nipples align correctly. I'll forget the embarrassment of the bloody nose at the dive bar where every other bloody nose it had ever seen was from blow. I'll learn to laugh graciously when my only season of softball is brought up. Oh, trip over first base, over my own feet in right field. I'll do these things if you manage a good score. Oh, follicle stimulation, a luteinizing hormone.
If you just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest today is the poet Jennifer Jackson Barry, reading some new poems. I keep thinking about form with your work because, again, when you started out this time, you talked about, I'm reading a fair triptych. So, I mean, there's this sense of framing that I keep hearing again and again. And I don't know if you hadn't said it, I'm sure I would not have known that those were tritinas, but it's just kind of interesting. And so I'm wondering if you have anything to say about your relationship to form.
I don't think of myself as a formal poet necessarily. I think that forms present a challenge to me. So sometimes if I'm in a slump or a writer's block, it's a way to break out. And then if something good comes of it, you know, great. I also think that I'm writing about pretty non-traditional things or some things that people don't talk about or don't say. So I think that presenting them, even in a loose form, is interesting. And I like poets that do that.
Okay. You're definitely in the territory of, you know, talking about gender and what makes desire, you know, and in a number of poems, you have fat girls, skinny girls, you know. Did it take you a while to write those poems? Or because, like you said, you're writing about things that are often hidden or not talked about. Did it take you, you know, years to get to those poems? Or is something you've always written about?
I've had an interesting journey, actually, recently, where I stepped away from writing poetry for several years. So I think when I stepped back into it recently in the last couple years, things came pretty quickly, and I'm very thankful for that and lucky for that. I think that my best poems are in my head for a long time, though, before I get them on the page, whether it's handwritten or typed up. I think I write certain lines, certain images in my head for days, a week or so before there's a draft. So I think that thought process is part of what I do. But I mean, I've had this body for a long time. I've had, you know, a long time to think about how this body operates in the world. And so some of it comes easy, and then sometimes it is a longer process.
Okay. So when you talk about having the poems in your head or lines in your head, how do you know when it's time for them to come out?
Sometimes it's when I have the time, okay. You know, when there's a moment to have quiet and get it down. I think when it becomes where I don't have to stretch to remember the line, when it just is there at the front of my head, at the tip of my tongue, that's when it's time to get it down.
Oh, that's good.
You know, been like in there that. Long enough.
Yeah, when it announces itself
exactly.
Almost, it's
yeah.
Like, here I come.
Right.
Interesting. Okay. Could you read some more?
Sure. So, you know, bouncing off of what I introduced with the last poem, I have a poem called I'm Showing. I've had this belly for years, this belly now speckled with insulin shot sites, some in varying stages of bruise. I'm 4 weeks and high glucose in the morning. I'm 5 weeks and internal ultrasound wand, the first condom inside me in over a year. I'm 6 weeks and craving spicy, hot sauce splashed on every plate. I'm 7 weeks and you're the size of a blueberry, baby. I'm high risk at risk of callousing each fingertip from up to 7 tests a day. Fasting, 1 hour after eating, bedtime. We are careful to speak in ifs, if all goes well at the next appointment, if I'm able to carry to term. But we've told everyone too soon. I was on incompatible meds. I stood at my mother's fridge before Sunday dinner 4 weeks ago and ate pinched fingers full of blue cheese. The journal I'm keeping isn't littered with cravings of ice cream and pickles, isn't interspersed with pictures of my belly with a placard of the time frame held to the side. When you start a pregnancy obese, the belly isn't for show. What I'll share with you is a log of glucose readings and carbs per meal. I hope my fingertips heal. I want to save you, but I'm afraid I'm carrying you like a bruise, that you're soon to fade, but not before you turn a sick yellow, not before you leave me tender. And a companion piece I'm telling. I have new bruises now on the back of my hand, blue and small as forget-me-not petals, where the medic tried to start a line en route to the ER, on the inside of my elbow at the IV site, for fluid since I was losing so much blood. The medic told me how his wife miscarried twice before they had their daughter. He gently pushed my ring aside so he could lay his hand flat across the top of mine as he tried to find the vein. He failed, and I didn't get a line until after the ER exam, the plastic speculum clicking into place, the collection of blood into a white cup. When I offered to take off my ring, he said, "That man of mine better not find out how easily I remove it. I feel like I've let go of too many things too easily. I tried to keep you, baby. I failed. These bruises will soon fade, too."
Let me ask you, those are great poems.
Thank you.
You talked about having these poems be more necessary than brave. Mm-hmm. Can you talk about the necessary a little bit and what that means to you?
Right. Earlier in our conversation, we talked about gender and issues of being a woman, being a girl. And there are certain things that are common for women, and miscarriage seems to be one of them. But we don't really talk about it at length. So it felt necessary for me to get these ideas down, to talk about them, to write about them as a way of grieving and processing what was happening.
And also because of the larger cultural silence around it.
Right. We celebrate so many things to do with motherhood and fatherhood, but we forget that there's some people that can't access that celebration. And then others who celebrate their lives in different ways, and we don't talk about that as much either.
Right. Okay. We have time for a couple more poems, I think.
Okay. I'm going to stay on the same topic, but this one also brings in eighth grade again, so here we go. This is called That Day. There were monthly roller skating parties during elementary school at the Val Arena rink, disco lights, the hokey pokey, couple skates, penny candy and orange pop at the snack bar. Calvin and I started by skating side by side, but then I said, "I don't bite," and he took my hand. I didn't do too bad with my old-fashioned line. There is a learning curve for flirting. In eighth grade, Davis Field, Friday night football game, I walked by Chuck, who was standing on the bottom bleacher. His Reebok pump shoes were right there, so I pumped and said hello. He walked me to my bus every afternoon for the next month. The walk was a red carpet, kids hanging out bus windows, watching. If someone was watching and saw my head on my husband's belly that day, it might have looked post-coital. I was there so he didn't have to watch me cry, as we said maybe this wasn't going to happen. He knew, though, my tears flirted with his skin. We didn't like our chances. It had been a year of trying. When I was a girl, I thought the most embarrassing thing was the wipeout fall while Calvin held my hand. I started the fall and we both skidded across the dark, polished wood, slowing only when we hit the bump in the middle of the floor. Some days the world isn't simple enough. Laugh when you fall, love like you're not sure what next month will hold. I was numbers 1, 2, 3, 7, 8, 9, and 10 on Calvin's list of girls after that fourth grade skate. Amy, Nicole, and Heather B. wormed their way into his middle. This list from a boy who wrote me, "I'm sitting here thinking of you and Pee Wee Herman." Some days the world was simple enough. There were many days I should have taken 70% and smiled. I wonder now if we would have kept trying after that day, had we really known how much one can love in just a month's time. This is called "I Lost Our Baby." I lost our baby in between the couch cushions, under the car seat, in the trunk. I lost our baby at Cedar Point. She was rolled up in a plastic money holder I wore around my neck. It looked like soap on a rope, and I left it on the back of the toilet after changing wet clothes. I lost our baby during a party. She was on top of the fridge, then she was gone. I lost our baby in the bottom of my purse and when she rolled under the bed. I lost our baby when I moved from the third floor walk-up apartment. I lost our baby at a Goodwill drop-off site in Bloomington, Indiana. I lost our baby when I was walking through the parking lot. My keychain broke and she slipped right off. I lost our baby in a friend's house fire. I lost our baby in the dorms when the girl across the hall borrowed her and never returned her. I lost our baby even though I wrote my name on her with a cute little stamp of a teddy bear reading, "This baby belongs to Jennifer." I lost our baby on trash day, on my birthday, on a Thursday. I lost our baby in dozens of pearls bouncing across linoleum tiles. I had her in my mouth and the string snapped.
The poetry of Jennifer Jackson Barry. Thank you so much.
Thank you. It was great to be here.
Yeah, wonderful.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Prosody, WESA's weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. Writers appearing on Prosody also have their work showcased in Chapter and Verse, a biweekly feature in Pittsburgh City Paper, the Arts Entertainment News Weekly, published every Wednesday. Prosody is produced by Jan Beatty and Ellen Wadey. Our sound engineers are Michelle Stoner and Lisa Alexander. Please tune in every Saturday morning at 6:30, 90.5 FM WESA.